I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you to make you informed on all the things that matter most. I'm Scott. That's Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Scott Johnson.
What's going on, Tom Merritt?
You know, I'm always excited on a Friday for Current Geek. It's the perfect way to start the weekend, but I'm extra excited because as soon as I'm done with this, I pack to go to the Night Attack show in San Francisco at Piano Fight, 4:30 p.m. Saturday afternoon in downtown San Francisco. But before I leave for that, I'm going to go see Captain America.
Oh, look at you with all your fancy plans. When do you fly out in the morning then? You see the movie tonight?
Yeah, I fly out 8 a.m. in the morning.
I will be seeing the film right around the time you leave. So,
seeing the film at 8 a.m. in the morning?
No, well, it'll be 9 a.m. my time, or 10 a.m. my time, I guess.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So a breakfast viewing.
Indeed. We weren't able to get tickets tonight. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to go and see Captain America and the Spider-Man and all those things. That'll be great. We'll talk about it, I'm sure, on this show, and we'll see how it does in the box office. Currently reviewing very well. Going to be a favorite of Current Geeks everywhere. But instead of all that, let's talk about our two guests. Joining us again, two guys who have been here before. Let's start with Lamar Wilson of the YouTubes. Lamar, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. By the way, I just wanted to tease all of y'all that I saw Captain America on Tuesday, so haha.
Man, Tuesday? Jeez.
Yeah.
How do you rate? What do you got some fancy, you got some fancy connection? What's going on there, man?
Yeah. Dolby, out of the blue, contacted me, and they're like, hey, we have this special theater that's plush and designed, nice, you know, for the Dolby Atmos and all that. Like, you want to come down? I'm like, no, of course not. Yeah. So I ran to the theater.
Yeah.
I have to darn a few socks that night.
Yeah. Yeah. Wash your hair, all those things. Well, Lamar, it's good to have you on, man. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us, the returning, the triumphant, the purveyor of all things Alpha Geek Radio, it's Todd Whitehead back on the show. Hello, Todd.
Hello, Scott Johnson. I'm so excited for the end of the week doing Current Geek, and as soon as I'm done here, I'm going to leave this room and do none of those awesome things that you guys are doing.
Oh man,
I hate you all.
Nah, you should go. You should go get some tickets. Take the wife.
Book a flight.
Yeah,
come on.
Book a flight. Go to San Francisco. You can broadcast it live on alphageekradio.com.
I wish to do and have been prevented from doing, but it's all good because I'm on Current Geek.
Oh, well, good. Well, thanks for being here, man. It's good to have you both here. We got all kinds of news to hit. And we'll do it now.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what do we got?
Never hit the news in anger. Sources tell The Wrap that Alden Ehrenreich has been chosen to play Han Solo in the Star Wars story Han Solo, directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. That movie isn't coming out till May 25th, 2018. There's no official studio announcement, but we think the reason they might have picked somebody and then it gets leaked out is Han Solo may be set to make a cameo appearance in Rogue One.
Oh, I didn't know that. And I saw some pictures of this, some kid. Is this for sure the guy? He looks
Alden Ehrenreich?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like The Wrap, Hollywood Reporter, Variety. Everybody's saying, our sources say, yes, this is the guy. He's working out a deal. But it sounds like the deal isn't actually signed yet. So maybe it won't be that guy.
He looks like Han Solo to me, like a young version of Harrison Ford. I'm totally down. I think it sounds great. Yeah. What do you think, Lamar? Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm so excited about Alden here. I mean, for years, I have no idea who he is.
Did you see the movie Hail Caesar? No one else did either. He's in.
Yeah. Okay. So I was like, yeah, he's going to be, who knows?
Yeah.
This is the kind of story that I get from my wife first, because she is on top of this stuff. And immediately we were talking about the fact that it's kind of cool that they picked an unknown because Harrison Ford was an unknown. And it might be a problem if they had picked somebody you knew from other movies, and that was still in your head.
Yeah, it's a mistake to hire Shia LaBeouf to potentially, I know this didn't pan out that way, but potentially be your replacement in the Indiana Jones movies. He was already a star of some renown. Not everyone likes Shia LaBeouf, but he was popular. You have to at least admit that. And it kind of gets in the way a little bit. So I like the idea of a fresh face. Todd, do you agree?
Well, first of all, disclaimer, Tom's wife works for YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
But also, just recently, what they achieved using relative unknowns for Force Awakens And look how wired up and excited we are for a largely, you know, new face cast for Rogue One. So I'm fully on board. I really trust the casting directors out of Disney Lucasfilm, because they've shown that they've got the chops and know how to pick good character, good actors to fill roles.
But Tom, we don't know much about what his cameo might be like in Rogue One, like to the extent.
No. Heavens, okay. No. We don't even know if he really will make a cameo. That's just a theory out there. Like, oh, they might be casting him early because they want to stick him in the Rogue One. And that would make sense. Yeah.
Now, you know, here's what I would pay for. Well, I wouldn't pay for it, but this is what I'd like to see. They did it in Ant-Man. They took Michael Douglas and made him look 30 years younger, pretty seamlessly. Some pretty crazy cool tech going on with that. We've talked about it on the show specifically. We had an article about it in some
months. Where are you going with this, Johnson?
A year ago.
Why, sure I like the direction this goes.
Why not Harrison Ford?
Oh, no.
Now, hold on. Have him come back in, because, look, it's all around his time, right, when he was younger. Have Harrison Ford come in, do that thing you did with Michael Douglas, and have him be himself in some transitionatory scene where he's still just he's the rogue from the time of episode 4, just before. You don't need a new guy. That's just gonna throw us all off, right? Why not?
For
why
the
not
Han Solo movie, you're just
no,
gonna have
not
Harrison
for that.
Ford.
Not for that. Just for the Rogue One appearance.
But then, if the Han Solo movie is in the round the same time period as Rogue One, don't you want the same actor playing it?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like weird that it was like, well, that was Harrison Ford, but now we got some other guy.
Well, I assume that story was a different era. Like, I assume that the Han Solo standalone.
It's the story of how he made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
Right. But when was that? Like, what age was he supposed to be when that happened? See,
it's before A New Hope. They're both before A New Hope.
But one is barely before A New Hope, right? Just like barely before. Like, probably
No spoilers here, but your technology that you're mentioning, maybe in a certain movie that you may be going to see tomorrow. And it's very ironic you mention that. That's all I'll say.
Really?
I will not spoil it. Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Oh.
For a really good scene. It's amazing.
My brain is racing as to who that would be, and I can't think of who that would be.
No, but the other thing is Harrison Ford, God bless him, is a much older man than he was in A New Hope.
Yeah.
And you can tell, even if they make him look younger, he's going to move different. He's going to talk different. Like, I don't know. I think it's smarter to just cast somebody consistent for all of the remakes.
All right, I'll give you that. Michael Douglas was in like a suit and kind of barely walking around a small room.
Yeah.
I'm with you. There'd be an uncanny valley going there that nobody wants. And I don't think Han Solo's even interested, or Harrison Ford's even interested in doing this again, if all the other stuff's to be believed. But one way or the other, you got your new Han Solo, everybody. So buckle down. It's going to be good. Who are they going to cast as the young Wookiee?
Well, there's all kinds of rumors about Darth Vader being in this, too. And it's not David Prowse in the suit.
That's
either
a good point. Yeah, I guess. Whatever they do, they only really have to worry about Solo's actor. Everybody else can be whatever. So it's fine.
But they still have James doing the voice.
James Earl Jones.
I'm sure that will be him forever.
You have to, right?
They'll just sample him, and even after he's dead, he'll keep doing it.
All right.
Surprising in Star Wars Rebels, so there's no reason why he wouldn't continue.
Yeah.
Oh, Baca. He did? He did that in Rebels? I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
They got Frank Oz to do Yoda, too.
Gosh dang it. I'm behind on that show. I need to catch up.
Oh, catch up soon. It's so good.
All right.
Yeah. Shout out to Sabine, my favorite. Wednesday, James Pinkstone wrote a blog post claiming that Apple deleted 122 gigabytes of his music from his hard drive. Thankfully, he had a backup. He talked about doing a support call with someone named Amber, whom he never identifies as an Apple employee, though he pretty much implies that she was. So I assume she was supposed to be an Apple employee, but he doesn't ever say that. She told him that Apple deletes files from your computer. However, on the Apple website, it says, quote, Apple Music doesn't change or alter your original music files that reside in iTunes for Mac or PC or on your iOS devices from which they were added. Serenity Caldwell from iMore.com wrote a great article explaining how all of this works, how a secondary device might have music removed to save on storage. That could have caused the problem for James. Jason Snell on Twitter noted that the dialog box for deleting a song versus removing the download is very confusing. That could have caused the problem. However, Ben Lovejoy from 9to5 Mac points out that Jim Dalrymple lost 4,700 tracks to a similar bug earlier in the year. And 9to5 Mac's Greg Barbosa described a similar experience of losing tracks from the main machine. So there's other theories out there. Maybe somebody buys a new Mac and transfers it over and thinks it's being treated as the main machine, but iCloud sees it as a second machine, and so it deletes things because that's what it does with secondary machines. Whatever actually happened to James Pinkstone, there's enough other people saying, yeah, something similar happened to me, that at the very least, you can say Apple is definitely confusing people into deleting their songs from their hard drive. And we've known for a long time that iTunes Match is not very good at matching all the time, which can mean in some cases you've lost the remix that you had on your hard drive before iTunes Match mangled it.
Anybody here lose music ever or any files on your computer where you had no explanation for it? I'm trying to.
I actually have quite the opposite experience. iTunes is, even on a Mac, it's like, I really dislike it. I do video as you all do, and I'll download songs for royalty free. And you know, once you download it, it'll automatically start playing or something like that. And iTunes adds it to the library immediately, and then uploads. And I have no way to stop. I've gone to the settings and say, you know, don't rip music from CDs, whatever. But I have no option. But like, if something gets played, it is in iTunes. I don't care if it's a 2 second jingle that I'm listening to. Mm. And so, yeah, I have the problem with too much stuff in iTunes.
Mm. Weird. Todd, you ever? I know you're not a giant Apple fan, but it's no fun losing your files.
Old school Mac fanboy. It's just that my clientele are not fanboys, so I'm stuck dwelling in the Windows world. But given my druthers, I'll be on Mac OS any day. But I've never trusted iTunes Match from the word go, because the thing that they're attempting to do with it is horrifyingly complex, because they wanted to offer huge amounts of cloud storage to people without offering huge amounts of cloud storage to people. So they have this massive library of as many songs as they could muster, and their attempt is, instead of actually having you upload the song to us, if it's already in our massive library, we'll just put a little pointer to the storage we've already taken up, and hey, now we've got millions of clients, and we didn't have to store millions of people's worth of music. Mm-hmm. Looks great on paper, but the sophisticated algorithms they need to keep track of synchronizing multiple external devices where they have no control over how the end user has categorized and labeled and changed the ID3 tags on these things. I don't think they really had any hope of this ever working properly, because there's a huge piece of it that they assumed everyone would be obeying the same rule book, and the end users, especially hardcore music lovers with huge libraries of custom music, are not playing by that rule book, and that's where the Match system fell apart.
Well, there's just the funny thing about me is I'm a big Mac fan. I use Macs all the time. I have for years, and I have all sorts of loyalty to the brand in terms of what I do with them and what I use the hardware for, but I never signed up for Match, and I don't have iCloud services enabled outside of basic stuff like syncing addresses and stuff like that. I don't know why there's a dissonance, though, and I know it's not just me, but there's like a... Apple's like Nintendo this way. They do some really crazy cool things to innovate and to iterate on other innovations, and they do really great jobs of getting that stuff to people, making their fan base happy, but they're terrible at online things. It's maybe not fair to say they're as bad as Nintendo is, but it's a strange... They're very similar. They feel like similar corporate cultures to me, and I just don't ever trust that stuff very, very much. And in the meantime, I trust Google Drive. I trust... you know, Dropbox. I trust other services pretty implicitly with my data. But with these guys, I don't know. It just never seemed like a thing I wanted to put myself through. And I didn't think they gave me the options to sort of control it after I got it all up there. So I never did it.
It's fine to do cool stuff with my music for me, like allow me to re-download and store and everything, but treat my data as holy. Mm-hmm. My data should just be mirrored. You should never delete my data off my hard drive. You should make it really clear if I'm deleting it, but want to keep it in the cloud, which is which. Like, keep in cloud, not remove, download, delete song. It is not obvious which of those is the cloud and which isn't. So come on, you got to fix that. On the other hand, a lot of these posts were saying Apple has a policy of deleting downloads, because this guy says Amber said that to him. I don't know what Amber said to him. I don't know why Amber said that, but... Apple does not have a policy of deleting your downloads. That is not what Apple is meaning to do. This is screwing up on Apple's part, possibly, but it's not as malicious as a lot of people are trying to make it out to
be. I wish he would have recorded his conversation with Amber. I would have loved to have heard her actually say that, because that I'm not so sure that's what she said, and B, if she did, I don't know that she'd be in this position she's in any longer.
Maybe it was just his friend Amber. She doesn't even work for Apple.
Because
he was never clear in that, right?
Humanoid robot Ocean One has recovered a small vase from the wreck of La Lune, once Louis XIV's flagship. The wreck has lain idle since November 1664. That's right, 350 years about. 32 kilometers underwater off the coast near the French city of Toulon. The 5-meter-long Ocean One has twin cameras, haptic feedback hands, and fully articulated arms and wrists. So basically the aim, this was a test run of it, is to make it have a human diver able to virtually dive anywhere without worrying about getting the bends.
Oh my, that seems cool. I always thought when I was younger, I went through a period of, like, everybody has space travel ideas in their kids. They all want to be astronauts, or we all want to go to space somehow, or into Star Trek or whatever. I went through this period of about 2 or 3 years, probably from, I don't know, 12 to 14, where all I wanted to do was go to the very lowest possible depths the ocean would let me go. And I don't know why I had that fantasy. I don't now. Like, it's the last thing I want to do now. Like, I can't think of anything a little more panic-inducing than being in a tiny little thing all the way at the bottom of the ocean. But I got to thank you for A, bringing this article to light, and B, having it be this thing that brought back these weird memories for me. Because on one hand... go ahead.
No, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, for sure. Go ahead. I want to hear it.
No, I was just going to ask, when you're a Sequest fan and as a when you're younger. It's like,
so
I wonder why you loved it.
So I don't know either. Like, it's a weird thing. And I know it's, like, in popular culture, it comes and goes, and you've got the Nemo stuff, and not Finding Nemo, but the other one, the Captain Nemo stuff, and you have
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
That's the thing I was trying to say, yes. And so we have a fascination, I think, occasionally. Sometimes the James Bond movie is about spending a lot of time underwater or something like that, and so it comes up again and again, and I think maybe I was just enamored with that or something, and now I want nothing to do with it. So I actually get a little anxious having you describe what this thing does.
Yeah, the reason why I like this article, because I watched, maybe about a year or two ago, I watched on Netflix a documentary James Cameron did. Remember in 2012, he went down to the Mariana Trench, which is the deepest part of the ocean,
right?
The deepest part in the world, which was like 35,000 plus feet. And just watching that, which is all kind of panic inducing, things were happening to me. So it was just fascinating that this thing can. Because I think when they got this vase, it went down, 20 miles? Mm-hmm. And it mimics a human. And so it was interesting. We can't go more than, I don't know, 40 meters or something like that?
Well, that's what I guess I'm glad about. I'm glad that it's robots. Yeah. And I would love to be the guy up, above water in the proper atmosphere for human survival, manipulating this thing, having the haptic feedback. Like, being there in that way sounds really awesome to me. But I can't do it. Todd, any thoughts on being underwater and fighting robots?
Telepresence trotted out as, you'll have a remote surgeon who miles away from the battlefield is saving lives through the miracle of robotic telepresence. And let's dial it back to maybe some gross motor movements. So I think this is probably a great test bed for that kind of thing where nobody's life is on the line and you don't need super fine control, but yet a virtual presence, that many kilometers under the ocean opens up a whole new horizon of almost in-person, in-the-moment decision-making and guidance of the robot without actually being in peril of, dying from nitrogen narcosis.
Yeah.
So
That's interesting.
Yeah. Scary, right? Freaking me out even with that word. Oh, look at Tom. He's in it. He's doing
okay,
it.
Okay, Tom. All right.
Okay, I'm almost to the bottom of the Mariana Trench.
Gosh, oh, wait, dang
who's
it.
Mario?
Get away, shark.
That's amazing. Someone capture that out and use that as a GIF or something. That was great.
Phil Plate has a write-up on Slate about Elon Musk's tweet from last week promising to send the SpaceX Dragon capsule to Mars by 2018. Plate had the same reaction probably most of us said, like, yeah, right. Then he looked at it, thought about it, and determined that actually SpaceX has the pieces in place for SpaceX to pull this off. if everything went right, and of course everything probably won't go right, but if everything went right, the Dragon 2 capsule has the thrusters needed to land, and the Falcon 9 recovery landings, there was one done this week, successfully demonstrate how the landing could be accomplished. The Dragon 2 will be tested in flight later this year. To get it there, they're going to need the Falcon Heavy rocket to get it all the way to Mars. That may make its first flight later this year as well. So if everything goes on schedule and goes well, they would have everything they need by 2018.
Do you think he'll go? You think this is it for Musk? Like, the minute this happens, he's going to go.
They're just going to send the capsule and some rovers and stuff. They're not going to send any people.
Because he said at some point or another, I'd go to Mars in a heartbeat if he could. So if they ever get to a manned version.
This is the test run
to
be like, can we get there safely? Can we put the capsule down on the ground? Once they've done all that, I bet he might.
I would. I'd go. Wouldn't you guys go? I'd get on the next plane, man.
I don't know. I'm probably wrong about this, but I remember reading there's two windows to get to Mars. One is about 4 years long or so.
Yeah, it's long.
And one is a little bit quicker if you get the right window to jet out there. But like, can you imagine being 4 years in anywhere?
Is there a return trip or not? I think that makes a difference too.
Yeah, if they said you could come back and it meant 8 years of your, okay, let's say it meant 4 years to get there, a year there, and another four to get back, so 9 years. Of course, you do
no
it.
No gravity.
You do
with
it.
No gravity.
There's Can some, I bring my we, dogs?
Well, yes, yes.
We, have, say we yes. haven't established artificial gravity yet, so you'll be floating around for 4 years. You have no bones. And you'll be a jelly pod when you arrive.
Okay. Well, and that's a really good point, is that we have the technology to send the capsule in 2018. We still are working on a lot of the biological necessities to make people able to survive a trip in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, the astronaut that just got back, Scott, what was his last name? Or was it? The guy that just came back, then they did all those tests and found out he was inches taller than his brother, who's a twin.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. Like, all that data is going to contribute to this. Like, we're nowhere near the manned flight to Mars thing, but I think I'd do it. If it was 9 years, and even if I was a bit of a jelly pod when I got there, I think I'd be all right with it. In fact, I think even if it wasn't a return back, just imagine what that is. That's like the most amazing human feat ever. Like, no one's gone that far from our planet. So I'd be all into that for some reason. I don't know why.
I'm pretty sure neither one of us would pass the physical.
You know what? And this, you're right about that. Now let's assume you and I were real specimens, right? And we could do it. Then it's different. But I don't know why that doesn't scare me at all. But going in,
but go to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. Why would that be? That's so weird. I don't know. I'm a snowflake.
There's less air. I mean, not really. It's still, you got no air under the ocean. In fact, you've got more. Well, okay. There's a pressure differential. Maybe you're like, I'd rather have no pressure than hundreds of pounds of pressure, thousands and millions of pounds of pressure.
Yeah. That's actually a pretty good metaphor for my life, to be honest. Yeah.
Gigwise reports that the star on the gatefold. Oh, wait. No, we were supposed to get rid of that one. But hey, there's a star on the gatefold, the David Bowie album. Go look it up.
Right on.
Thanks, I Am Sci-Fi, for sending it. Lamar has an idea that he wants to talk about. There's an interesting article about this in Equity Arcade. Lamar, are there too many video games?
Whoa.
That is the question. And I know we got some video game players in here, Scott being one. Mm. It's something I've been thinking about, guys, because, you know, I'm a person who gets games from, you know, some may be a different use case. I do get games from different developers. However, I looked at the state of games and the frequency they come out in. And, you know, I hear people who are on a Nintendo side who, you know, cry when something gets delayed, yet they haven't played the last 10 games they received that year. And it just gets me very overwhelmed. Now, I know there's a financial side to this. Maybe you all can talk about it. I'm not saying that there's a video game crash coming necessarily. I'm not saying that any companies are going to go under because of mobile gaming or whatever. I'm just saying, just as a whole, are there too many choices out there for games? And I would say yes, because for the games I remember sitting here a good month, didn't play anything because I was just overwhelmed. I didn't know what to choose. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know where to finish.
Yeah.
And it was just too much. And I hadn't even set up a PC for Steam. I'm just talking about my consoles. Lord have mercy when I look at my Steam. That's a whole...
Steam's a whole other animal. I mean, I'm going to say that you're right and wrong, or right in that you're right in that it's true that we have more than we've ever had, and the choices. It's a lot like it's like media now. Like you can get so much stuff. You're going to be 1,000 TV shows everyone's telling you that are great and you should be watching. It's this embarrassment of riches, and you're not caught up on anything because you don't know where to start or begin or whatever. I totally get that, and I feel like video games are in that category now, and it will be. It has gotten more so and will continue to get more so that way because you and I, with very little money, can go in the garage and build a video game and put it out on platforms and have it become successful and or at least make the attempt without too much of a risk. That didn't used to be the case. And now that that's the case, you don't just have all the AAA titles, which I would actually argue are less. There are less AAA titles in development than ever before. But it's being filled in with all this other stuff coming from all these other places. And sometimes what looks like an independently developed game by a team of five people gets picked up by Sony or Microsoft or somebody they injected with 100 people. And now it's a AAA title unto itself. But outside of all those, the weird politics that happen in video games, there's no doubt that it is an absolute embarrassment of riches right now. There are so many experiences, so many things to do. However, the only part I argue with you is that it's a bad thing. Like, that much choice for me or you is probably overwhelming. But for average players, they are happy to know that their kind of style of game is something good on mobile. Or they're happy to know that this small retro-inspired 80s throwback game is available on Steam. That's just my style. I'll play that. And then you still got your MMO players, and you got your strategy players, and your TCG players, and your shooter players. And they've all kind of got their own niches in a way that they've never had before. So I don't know if it's bad, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I just think like back in our day when there were fewer games, we hung on to those games, we cherished them, we tried to 100% them, we played them, you know, and we really enjoyed them. Now it's just like it just feels so throwaway, you know, like you buy a game with $60, get bored with it in a couple of days and demand more. I want a new one. To me, it's creating a different mentality or an appreciation for the work that's gone into it.
I agree with that. That can definitely, I mean, I've got, I don't know, 20 games I'd like to finish that I haven't because there's no time. And most of those are on Steam, funny enough. And that doesn't even count the other stuff. And we got Uncharted coming out in a couple of days and the Overwatch beta is out now. And the final game's out this week or this month. But then again, Todd, you and I still keep going back to the Diablo 3 well over and over because it just keeps coming up, right? So sometimes that can be done right, and those games can stand the test of time and keep drawing us back.
Yeah, and there is an absolute wealth of choices out there, especially if you include the mobile platform in your calculations. That's just a tidal wave of arguably shovelware, but titles nonetheless, and the occasional gem. But it's all about where you are in your life. You can make the same kind of argument about really good nerdy movies and television stuff in development. It's all over the place to the point where I'm waiting for stuff to come out on streaming rather than going to the theater, whereas it would have been such a rare occurrence earlier in my life that I would have stormed the beaches to get to the movie three times in its first day. Just because I was so starved for input. Now it's like I can kind of wait for what I'm really interested in. Mm-hmm. It kind of forces the content creators to up their game to get my attention and my money. Also, I find myself in a weird place of where right now I'm actively not touching Overwatch right now because I know it's going to consume my life as soon as I dip my toes back in there.
Yeah.
And I'm not in a place where that is really doable, but it's something I profoundly don't want to do halfway. So I'm actually having to delay gratification on some of these things just because they don't fit in my life right now. But it's also good to know that they're all there waiting for me in my Steam library or on my mobile device or on my PC when I'm ready.
Yeah. It's a weird time, Lamar, no matter what. And I don't know. I mean, it is something lost because nobody can sit and savor that once a month game experience that, you know, at the most that they were able to get. You're probably right. You know, they're having to make smaller experiences or make experiences that are a little more throwaway. Mobile, a lot of people would argue mobile's kind of tarnished things that way. I mean, we could have a whole show about this, and obviously we don't have the time for that. But but it's a fascinating subject that I'm always interested in because the way this stuff ebbs and flows is fascinating to me as an industry.
Yeah. I mean, I always throw it back to books. Books used to come out rarely, and then they started coming out a lot. And then those serial stories from Charles Dickens started to be collected into books. And all of a sudden, now we have books coming out hundreds a month. And self-publishing has made it probably thousands to millions a month. But you don't complain that there are too many books because we think of it differently. We think of it as, oh, well, but a book is something I can always get to. I can pick it up whenever I want. It's timeless, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if video games are making that transition from always being a very timely thing. Like, I want to play it right when it comes out, talk to all my friends about it, and becoming eventually more of a library type thing where you can, they're good enough that you can always go back and play them later.
That's a really interesting perspective on that. I hadn't even considered that, but we are probably getting to a place where the problem is it's so tied to innovation in graphics and performance and all this other stuff and AI and better CPU usage and all this stuff. It's so connected to that, that we've never really slowed it down to where, you know, books for all their glamour today in both audio and digital form, they're still just books. You know, there's very little that has changed, and how you consume them changed slightly, but not much. But video games changed so drastically, and the advent of VR at least wants to be a huge blip in that place and have everything kind of shift around it. And, well, what does that mean? And maybe VR is the place we'll get to play all these virtual experiences forever, or maybe not. But that's a really interesting idea. If it is getting to that point where we're in that long tail and things can slow down a little, it'll be less about what's the hot new machine and more about, I haven't played that for 20 years. I'm going to plop down and play it without all the current walls that pop up when you want to do something like that.
I think it's a little ways off, but that I think is eventually where we end up.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Well, great. This is a good discussion.
Yeah, great topic, Lamar.
Yeah, good topic, Lamar.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Let's finish off with animals who want to kill us all and send us back to the Stone Age. This weekend, I lost my internet on Saturday afternoon. It was not fixed until Monday afternoon. And it turned out the reason why is, like, right over there, not too far, a squirrel chewed through a cable. Took them 2 days to figure it out. We can talk on a separate show about that. But that response that caused a lot of people to point out to me this story that another Jay Martin sent into the subreddit. The Large Hadron Collider went offline last week. Engineers found the charred remains of a possible weasel, or it may have been a marten, near chewed power cables. This is not the first time. In 2009, a bird dropped a baguette on critical electrical systems, causing a disruption in the LHC. And in 2006, raccoons conducted a coordinated attack on a particle accelerator in Batavia, Illinois. Why animals are attempting to prevent research into particle physics or fiber optic cables from carrying the internet is unknown at this time.
Wow. That's
we are doing something in the magnetic connections or vibrations. Of course, they're trying to bring us back to nature, guys.
You think that's what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
The Higgs boson. You are not supposed to know.
Todd, what were you going to say?
Take an opportunity here, because if you cast your mind back to the days of the electromechanical computing, when a moth got into the relays of one of the early systems, and from that we got the phrase "a bug in the system." Mm. Now we have a weasel in the wiring. Yes, you heard it here.
A weasel in the wiring. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not getting a connection. Ah, weasel.
Yeah, Tom's internet's acting all squirrely today. See, works there too.
Hey!
Oh,
it's not bad.
That. By the way, don't email and point out that people might have been using the term bug before the moth was found. The moth is what popularized
That's
it.
That's right.
Everybody knows that.
We know. Calm down. Keep your
and
saving.
Buy yourself a copy of The Year in Tech History, illustrated by Scott Johnson.
There it
find
is, right
more
there.
More great facts.
Do you have? Oh, I thought you were
grabbing
it.
What a great segue.
I thought he had it in his hand. You don't have it in your hand? Dang it.
Almost did.
Oh, shoot. Did you get it? Can you reach it? Yeah, there it is. A handful of stuff. Tom is famous for this. All right. Big thanks to all our...
called The Year in Tech History.
There it is. Big thanks to all our subreddit submitters. You guys are amazing. We mentioned another Jay Martin, Captain Kipper, Lamar, and his awesome contribution today. Busy Zombie Lord. All you guys and many Gavra. More. Yep.
Don't forget Gavra.
Gavra.
And Tipo de Cinta. You weren't going to say Tipo de Cinta because you didn't want to try
to. No, because I'll pronounce it wrong and upset the space-time continuum, so I wasn't going to do it. But we really appreciate you guys. That's over there at currentgeek.reddit.com. Go there today. Real quick, if you want to support the show and you're wondering, well, how do these guys stay on the air? Well, I've got an answer for you. It's your support over at frogpants.cratejoy.com. It is the Current Geek, and it's the only show we do this with, the Current Geek Crate Joy. It's a little like Loot Crate or Loot Boxes, the stuff you get every month, except it's from us. That means art and stuff from me, writing and stuff from Tom, stuff from guests, things that have nothing to do with any of us that we just found and thought it'd be great to put in there. We just sent shot glasses to tons of people. And if you want to be in on this, it's super easy. Go to frogpants.cratejoy.com and sign up. You can see what's involved, what's there, and be a bigger part of the family over there. That's frogpants.cratejoy.com. All right.
This is so cool.
Isn't that cool? It's super cool. Yeah. It's a ton of work. I mean, I'm just going to come out and say it. It's a bunch of work. In fact, I'm getting ready to crank out a whole half a calendar. That's going to be a nightmare, but it's worth it because these people are amazing. And if they support us this way, then we're willing to do the work. So anyway, that's great. Here's this. Time for pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
Okay, that music that you hear right there is the time for us to ask you guys questions and areas of your expertise. It's one of our favorite parts of the show. And I haven't told either one of you what to expect today, I don't think. Maybe I did. I don't remember. But if I didn't, great. If I did, oh well.
No, I forgot about the segment.
Yeah, I bet you did. Most people do, it turns out. So I'm going to ask you these questions. You're going to answer them the best way you can. Let's do you, Todd. You're the most distant in terms of returning guests. So let's get you in here and do yours. Are you ready for your questions about Krull, the movie Krull?
My body is ready.
All right, this is the old movie Krull. Some of you may remember it. It's the first film sack movie we ever did. And here's your first question. What character does Liam Neeson play in Krull?
I have no freaking... He plays the glaive.
Pretty close. Plays a character named Keegan is the correct answer. Keegan. Oh, yeah, and
Tom... Yeah, by the way, would have given you a half point for saying Qui-Gon jokingly because it's so close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. All right, next one. Who directed Krull? Who is the director of the movie Krull?
Director McDirector Pants.
Pretty close. It's Peter Yates is the correct answer. Peter Yates.
You get a third of a point for that because, hey, Bodie McBoatface. You would have got two-thirds of a point if you would have said it was directed.
Nicely done. All right. What is the name of the magical weapon used in Krull?
The aforementioned glaive.
You are correct. Nicely done. Who is the primary villain in the film? And I'll give you a hint. It's the and then the name of something.
The big fangy guy who clutches the glaive in his chest. I have no idea.
Oh, Tom, he may be close. It's the Beast. He kind of described a beast.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's worth like 8/10 of a point.
All right, 8/10 of a point. Not bad, Todd. Next up, who composed the score for Krull? And the hint here is that he is still a very popular, highly regarded, and often used composer for films.
John Williams.
You are incorrect. It is James Horner. James Horner is the proper
answer. Once again, 2/3 of a point for it was composed?
Next up, what is the name of the ship that the Beast and his army travel in?
The Beast Barge.
You are incorrect. It is the Black Fortress. The Black Fortress.
Would have also accepted Bodie McBoatface.
Second to last question. What actor plays Cowlin in the film?
Looking for some kind of bovine reference here to go with the name, but... John Steer.
You are incorrect. It is Ken Marshall, but I like your moxie.
Yeah, no, moxie gets you a half a point.
Yeah. Final question. According to Scott in Film Sack number one, what is the coolest part of Krull?
The coolest part of Krull.
Yeah. The irony here is you've actually heard that episode, but it was the first one in like 2009, so who would remember? I barely do.
My brain no worky. The Black Widow.
Black Widow. Incorrect. It is the Fire Horses. The Fire Horses.
Trick question. There was no cool part of Kroll, no matter what they said on Kroll.
So. All right, Todd, just sit tight while Tom stews over your score as we bring Lamar on up to the stage and we have him answer questions about Nintendo history.
Oh, okay. I might lose my license here to be an ambassador.
Well, you are. I know you're a fan. You did a lot of coverage for them. So this is going to be a real test. Here you go.
All right.
Question number one. What was the first product ever produced by Nintendo?
Okay. I know this. They... okay. It wasn't video games. It was... Oh,
If it helps
plates.
You... Plates?
I don't remember.
The answer is playing cards. Playing cards. You know, collectible playing cards.
I give a third of a point there, though, because I want some Nintendo plates.
Yeah.
Gotta get them all, man. Gotta get them all. All right, next question. Those are technically called Hafunda cards, but I don't know what that means. Next question. In 1975, Nintendo released their first arcade game. What was this called? What was the name of this game? 75.
Yep. Okay, so 75, it had to be, no, Donkey Kong wasn't in the 70s. It had to be a Pong, even though that was Atari?
Nope. It's EVR Race is the name of the game. No one remembers it because
shoot,
it was not memorable.
I forgot about EVR Race.
Yeah, it's
old. I'd never heard of that game.
Old as dirt.
I used to play that at the Ken's
I'm
Pizza.
I'm so young.
Yeah, it's old as dirt. You never even find them in like old restored arcades. It's super old. Next question. What was the final game released in the Nintendo Game & Watch series? Remember those? Little black and white little jump around deal?
Yeah. The final game was called Time's Up.
All right. You got to give him something for that. It's Mario the Juggler was the actual game, but that was... That was pretty funny.
Actually, full point, because his time was, in fact, up. It was a correct answer.
It was really funny. All right. What does Rob, Rob the Robot, right? What does Rob stand for? Because it's an acronym, R-O-B.
Oh, I have two of the Amiibo, too. It's called...
It's so dumb. It's so...
Radio?
It's so dumb.
Radio out beer.
Nope. It is Robotic Operating Buddy is the correct answer.
I literally should have known that, though.
Third of a point because the initials were correct.
There you go. What year did Nintendo release the original Smash Brothers, Super Smash Brothers on the Nintendo 64? What year would that have been?
Okay, I can get this because I remember playing it. This had to be 99.
You are correct. Nicely done.
All right.
Yeah, woo. We got one. In what game does Yoshi make his first appearance?
Super Mario 2.
You are incorrect. It was Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
No, wasn't he in 2? He was. Oh,
no,
God,
2. Crazy. You got to remember, 2 is that weird other game.
Yeah, I thought he was in that weird one.
No.
Oh my. Because I don't remember it. It was horrible.
It's not so bad now. If you play it kind of holds up. But at the time, it was like, what the crap is this?
Why did I say world? Okay.
All right, next question. What was the second to last question? What was the only Legend of Zelda game released on the Upper Nintendo? I think he meant Super. What was the only Legend of Zelda game released on the Super Nintendo? He spelled it wrong.
Okay, Super Nintendo.
So it was called The Legend of Zelda, : and then this.
A link between two Zeldas?
Oh! No, that's the porn parody you're thinking of.
I saw a GIF for that on Tumblr.
Yeah, you gotta watch. There's always Rule 34 and all. It is great. A link to the past is the correct answer.
Oh! Okay. Yeah. You get a half point. Yeah. You get a half point for that. Also because there were no games on the Upper Nintendo.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. It was
a real failure, that piece of hardware. All right, final question. What console marked Nintendo moving to optical media as opposed to cartridges?
Okay, optical media was the GameCube.
That is correct. Ends on a nice. On a ding. Well done.
Woo!
All right, you both fought the hard fight. Let's see how you did versus each other. Tom, how'd they do?
Final score ends Lamar 4.1, Todd 2.6.
Yay!
Nicely
I get to
done.
Keep my ambassadorship with Nintendo.
For the record, I completely broadsided Todd with curl questions. I just want that to be known.
Who told you that I knew anything about curl?
Well, we were down to the wire and I could not think of a thing, and so I thought, you know what, I'm just gonna throw him a wild card, and so I told Mike to make these questions about curl. And,
I thought this was like his favorite movie or something.
Nope. I've never seen it.
You've never even seen Kroll? Oh, man. You should watch Kroll, dude.
You were still throwing quotes. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Because my wife has very fond memories of it as one of the great bad movies of her youth, so she has described it to me in great detail.
Ah, interesting.
Well, it is a great bad movie, for sure. And worth seeing if you ever get the moment to try it. All right, that's it for that. Check this out.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
So I don't have any good reason why we shouldn't have a little forecast. Part of the show where we talk about the future of geek, of tech, of whatever. And both of you had ideas. Let's briefly touch on each one of those. Lamar, you don't think we're going to be watching superhero movies soon. In fact, you think there's going to be a revolt against them, and that's going to affect the entire industry. Tell us your thinking there.
Yeah, they're doing great now. I think people are going to get burned out with the Avengers, with DC, with this whole superhero people who are better than us, who are not relatable type of thing. And I think people are going to turn on it, and we're going to go back to just regularly good movies that people have to write actual scripts from instead of relying on comics.
Wow.
So, I don't know.
You think superhero movies should register with the government because they shouldn't be better than us. They should be controlled. They can't just run amok anymore.
Are you Team Lamar,
that
Tom?
That is correct.
You Team Lamar now? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, you see Lamar.
There have to be rules. Even Tony Stark agrees.
He does agree with me.
Yeah.
Not harm the American public by Batman v Superman. I mean, come on. It's got to be controlled.
That's true. It's a good point.
Hey, parts of it were good. Wonder Woman.
I would be lying if I said this is the first time this has come up on the show, because it hasn't. We've talked about this a few times about when this will happen, not so much if, but when. But isn't it just part of, it's just the cycle, right? We cycle in and out of these things in our popular culture.
Yeah.
I would admit, though, that we're in a different place now, because they can find refuge in the Hulus and Netflix original productions of the world. So we might see a first ever migration away from Hollywood blockbuster, and the stories will continue in a more humble format that didn't used to exist as a place where these stories could go.
Yeah.
Now, that's a really good point. That's a really, really good point. Because I do like the Netflix originals way better. Well, I don't say way better than the movies, but they're more realistic. They feel like, hey, this is just another person down the block who happens to be blind but can beat up everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't. I mean, yeah, it sounds weird on paper. Like, oh, sure, it's really reality when a blind guy can fight people with, you know, extrasensory. But if you watch it, it isn't about that so much. Like that, they don't make a big deal about his superpowers. Where a lot of these blockbusters, it's very much about like he can do these amazing things, or she can.
Tom, do you think? Obviously, Marvel's betting that this isn't going to happen. They're going to give us another. What do we have up to 2020 or something? It's all
I don't
up?
Know. I go back and forth. Part of me thinks I think it'll be more than 1 to 2 years, but part of me thinks there will be a fade in the box office of these. People will just get tired of it. But they're doing a good job of coming out with different kinds of movies, right? So Deadpool and Guardians of the Galaxy are the first two examples of them saying, hey, not every one of these is going to be exactly the same. So they may be able to, you know, spin the genre in lots of different ways and extend the life a little more. But then there's also James Bond. And it's quite possible that while the huge number reduces, that the Marvel Universe can just James Bond it forever and just keep going.
Yeah, I could see that. Todd, you have an idea here about portable VR becoming the resurgence or the resurrection of the Justin TV world, where we live vicariously through strangers who we follow on the internet simply by putting on our VR helmets and seeing what they're doing, I guess.
The popularity of vicarious viewing of other people's lives is already established. Reality TV shows us that there is a huge audience for exact kind of looking into someone else's life. What I was thinking of is as mobile, widely broadband becomes more of a reality, the people who make portable electronics will leverage that into, okay, we've got enough bandwidth to send a real-time stream of a 360-degree VR view. We can strap a helmet cam onto Bob and send him out into the world, and 2,000 people can put their headsets on and follow Bob around, not just looking through a camera, but looking around his world. And I think that will become a fascination of people, at least in a flash in the pan sense, and it might become a bigger form of immersive entertainment that is YouTube-esque in its. You've got these pioneers going out, trying it on, what Justin TV was in its early iterations of, you know, dude wearing webcam. Mm-hmm. Now, dude wearing VR cam, and you know, you're out there living it with the person you follow of your choice in real time.
Lamar, I'd follow you around on a VR deal. Why don't you go get on that?
I would probably do that. The reason I love this, Todd, you mentioned YouTube. This is something YouTube has to jump on quickly because they already have the base of vloggers. People are fascinated with vloggers and people who just showcase their lives. And this is the next step of that evolution. And I think it would be fantastic to strap on my Vive or Oculus Rift and just sit back and live someone else's life because my life is not that interesting. So why not?
Why not? Yeah, no.
And like you said, Todd, it's not just reality show. It's also Periscope, Facebook Live. Like, people definitely enjoy just popping in and like, what's a person in the other side of the world doing in a culture that's entirely different from mine?
Yeah, you could even say, I mean, there's more static, but you could say Facebook itself or Instagram or any of our more not moving pictures or less involved living someone else's life is those are still very palpable. Like you want to see what Bieber's up to. Here's an Instagram page and you're going to get a trillion followers. Why? Well, because they all want to know what the crap's going on. So if you could figure out a way to shrink that experience down, put it into the side of his mic on stage. I'm still using Bieber for some reason. But anyway, Bieber's up there on stage and now everybody can live through his view of the audience, what he's doing up on stage. Like all of that would sell. That would just go crazy. It'd be huge.
Yeah. I think the truth here is that you are a closet Bieber fan, and now now we know the truth out. So, yeah.
Well, I have an announcement to make. I'm glad you brought this up.
What do you mean?
We got an email from a listener at currentgeek@gmail.com. That is where you'll send them. It's someone named Greta who just says this simply. So what's your new favorite Marvel movie after Civil War? Well, I don't think any of us have seen it except Lamar. And Lamar already has shown in his prediction a distaste for the current cinematic films in the
books. I don't have a distaste. I'm just saying I see a revolt happening. I love the movie.
I agree. So rank them since you've seen them all. What's your favorite right now of that? Let's say of the Marvel movies, since that's the question.
Does she mean what's your favorite, not including Civil War, or does she mean after? Now that Civil War is out, has it become your new favorite, or do you still have another?
I assume it's what you just said, that if now that it's out, now take total accounting of all of them and which is your favorite now.
I mean, it's easy to say the latest one because it is a very complete movie. Like, it is, I couldn't find any fault with it. Like, it's a, once you see it, you'll see what I mean. It's a very complete movie. But if I had to not say Civil War, I would say I love Deadpool. I just saw it last week on iTunes.
Yeah, Deadpool's awesome.
And it blew my mind how good that was. Yeah. And so, that would be about, I'd say two, sorry.
Yeah. Todd, even though you haven't seen Civil War yet, do you have a favorite?
I've been discussing Deadpool a lot, actually hardcore recently, just because it is past the Gilligan period truly and well and is in streaming. So that's very fresh in my mind as a, here's another interesting thing you can do with a comic book, basis. But see, there's so darn many really good ones.
Yeah, they're all good. It's easy to pick one you liked the least. Like, I think Age of Ultron was my least favorite, but I would put Winter Soldier like at the top. This one may supersede that, but right now that's where my head's at.
Yeah, Fantastic Four is not on anyone's list.
No, ever.
It's not even on.
Either generation.
No.
Actually, the first round with Michael Chiklis was a really good movie to watch on your iPad while you're working out.
It's a good time. It's all right. Yeah. It's not great, right. But it's not it's not just utter terribleness where you wish you'd never spent money on it or gone to the movie theater. It's,
well,
it's okay.
And so I guess Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in the Spider-Man movie. That's the scuttlebutt anyway. Yes. And is this going to improve? Is this Marvel saying like, look, you guys, you keep trying to make Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and you keep falling a little short with people. Let's all work together on this for the betterment of us all.
Yeah. I see that happening because Sony is still going to distribute it. I mean, that's the deal they have, but they need to give the reins back to Marvel. Fantastic Four, Fox needs to do the same thing for Fantastic Four. Now X-Men has done great. That one's a questionable, who owns that? Fox owns that. They've been handling that pretty well, but Fantastic Four needs a do-over, and I mean a real one. And I think Marvel having full control would do justice for that. I think so too.
I think they could do justice to it, and man, I hope that happens. I mean, I know that stuff's all up in the air right now, but
the Hall of Justice is a DC thing.
That's right. I got a quick cross in my streams here. Meanwhile, in the other comic book universe. All right. Well, there you go. Thank you for your feedback. CurrentGeek@gmail.com is where you send them. And that is going to do it for today's program. Huge thanks to our guests for being here. Let's whip around the table and tell folks where they can find stuff people have going on. Let's start with Todd. Todd, where can we find you and why should we?
Oh, my stuff lives on alphageekmedia.com where you find many fine shows like this one. Recently redesigned the front page. Check that out. Redesign the whole mobile experience. So point your phone's web browser at alphageekmedia.com and see the whole new easy to use now Android friendly video playback, on demand episodes, all everything you want from nerdy goodness all there on your phone. And also if you know of a show that values the live show experience like we do, we all hear think that something very important comes from a live audience. And if they're looking for an outlet, send them to join.alphageekmedia.com and they can submit their show and we'll love to get them on the schedule. Just needs to be arguably geeky in some way just so they fit into Alpha Geek Media.
Very nice. We discriminate against any serious programming. Well, except DTNS. I'd say DTNS is the most serious thing you got on the lineup. And that features a bunch of chuckleheads, so it's fine. Awesome. Do check that out. Lamar, where can people find more of the Wilson train?
Yeah, definitely. So I love showcasing products, whether it's from food to unboxing cool gadgets and items and being silly with them. And so my world exists on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/Lamar Wilson from my latest video of taste testing the Batman v Superman cereal. Hey. People asked for that. People at they wanted to see me eat cereal. So I was like, I will give you what you want.
Huge in Korea.
Are they? Are they big in Korea?
Oh, God, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Unboxing gaming PCs. I it's just a channel of fun. So if you like seeing fun products and a fun guy, check me out there. That's youtube.com/Lamar Wilson.
Be one of the many, many thousands who have already decided Lamar is a part of their daily life. So go do that and get there. Tom Merritt, anything else, sir, before we go?
Oh, man. Just a huge, huge, big, gargantuan thanks to many of you out there that I know have pre-ordered Pilot X at inkshares.com. The book is barreling forward to the pre-order goal. We're 567 copies out of 750. We got 43 days left. So if you are at all interested in a novel about a guy who comes from a race of time travelers called the Alendans, who might need to prevent the destruction of the universe, but might have to destroy everyone to do it. Seems odd. Got to check it out. There's sample chapters available. Go to inkshares.com, search Pilot X, and put down a pre-order if you would.
Perfect. Tomorrow is Free Comic Book Day. Don't forget, go to frogpants.com/store. There will be free prints, no matter where you live, sent anywhere in this big green earth. So no off-planet stuff yet, but we're working on that. It is absolutely free. It is no strings attached. We do it every year for the last 4 years. Been a tradition. Myself and my artist daughter, we get together. We each make a print. This year, it is villains and their pets. That's the theme. And you can actually go see a preview right now at frogpants.com/store and sign up anytime tomorrow, and we'll get them out in the mail. They're signed. They're free. It's our way of saying thanks. I guess that's it. It's going to do it for us. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Don't forget to check us out, currentgeek.com. All the links are there. Everything's there. Find us on Twitter, at currentgeek, at Scott Johnson, at Ace Detect for Tom. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review some recent changes to YouTube's copyright protection system called Content ID. For copyright owners wanting to stop infringing uses on YouTube videos of third parties, there are multiple options for making claims to pull potential infringing videos down or mute them for further investigation under DMCA procedures. For example, copyright owners can make manual claims about specific videos they notice, or for some users with a lot of copyrights, an automated system called Content ID can also help make such claims. Although the video poster can challenge such claims to try and get the video posted again, this process causes significant delays and frustration even if the copyright claim turns out to be not valid. For online content creators like podcasters with video content and streamers, the use of YouTube and viewer access to videos is vital for staying in business. Particularly with the automated Content ID system, any over-inclusive identification of potential infringement stifles the very content creators which draw so many viewers to the platform. Thus, YouTube is always striving to make the system more accurate at properly identifying copyright infringements while leaving fair use and licensed uses alone. The most recent of these changes were announced on YouTube's creator blog last week. A video subject to an automated copyright claim under Content ID will still be able to generate advertising revenue while the claim is resolved, and once the claim is resolved, the winning party will be paid accordingly. Thus, videos from popular content creators will not always just disappear or get muted, and more importantly, the ad revenue that would normally come in would still be possible if the copyright claim is challenged as invalid. These changes will help balance the leverage between the parties in a YouTube copyright dispute. Content creators will not just be at the total whims of the automated Content ID system, and YouTube indicated in the blog post that further improvements to make this system even more accurate are likely on the way. The bottom line is, the concept of fair use is a gray area in copyright law that is ever-shifting thanks to many court challenges and decisions. That makes tailoring an automated copyright infringement detection system even more difficult, and we should give YouTube credit for making efforts to have this system be fair and balanced for both copyright owners and content creators, both of which deserve to be fairly compensated for their creative works. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.